Hi, and welcome to Guideposts. I'm your volunteer reader, Sandy Summers. Today we will begin reading from the June-July 2025 issue of Guideposts with features like The Upside. Editor's Note by Edward Grinnan, Editor-in-Chief. My Father's Gift. Funny, but I can't remember any of the gifts I gave my dad for Father's Day when I was a kid. Try as I might, nothing comes to mind, unlike some of the awful presents I gave Mom, who saved every one. I came along late in Dad's life, a surprise baby. I don't think he was quite ready for me. I saw him as a stern, taciturn disciplinarian, both present and distant. He grew up hard during the Depression. His wasn't a generation when parents were besties with their kids. He worked hard at a job he found little satisfaction in. When I graduated college, he accused me of wanting to find a fun job, and well, hey, I did. He found his greatest satisfaction in his faith. I do remember one gift he gave me. I was 8 and spending a night in the hospital after having my tonsils removed. My father slipped into my room. I brought you something. In his hand was a Lionel model train car carrying sticks meant to represent lumber. We both loved model trains. He put the car on the windowsill and asked how I was doing. There was a gentleness to his voice that I hadn't heard before. I couldn't talk much. He left as quietly as he came. Go to sleep now, Eddie. I slept fitfully and was scared by the unfamiliar surroundings every time I woke up. Then I would see the Lionel train car on the sill, and somehow it made everything better. My father and I had our ups and downs, but whenever I felt that distance between us, I remember that model train car, and it made things better. There are two stories in this issue by writers who had far more contentious relationships with their father. One by Diane Stark, who must make things right with her terminally ill dad, and the second by our cover subject, Jermaine Wilson, who, like his father, must turn a life of crime into a path of faith. These pieces showed me that God's love can close even the greatest distance. Guideposts, Inspiration for Life, June-July 2025, Volume 80, Issue 4. Features, page 22. Grateful in all things. Ever feel stuck in your routine? A farmer reclaims her joy in her work. By Raylene Nickel, Keefe, North Dakota. Page 12. A Better Man. Incarcerated for 7 years, he found redemption in a seemingly hopeless place, his prison cell. By Jermaine Wilson, Leavenworth, Kansas. Page 18. Beyond My Control. Words You Never Want to Hear from a Pilot. I Need You in the Crash Position. By Jeannie Hughes, Hurricane, West Virginia. Page 28, Grandma Camp. It was a summer tradition. Had she let it get out of hand? By Peggy Frizon, Rexford, New York. Page 34, Making Things Right, A Dying Father and a Estranged Daughter and Her Yearning for Closure. By Diane Stark, Brazil, Indiana. Page 39, Goodwill Greeting. How a blind man named Joseph opened her eyes after a devastating diagnosis. By Roberta Messner, Huntington, West Virginia. Page 42, Stroke of Luck. Three wondrous moments on the links prove golf is more than a game. By Mary Jane McCartney, Newport, New York. Jessica Reed, Walton, New York. And Karen McLean, Denver, Colorado. Page 44, Cat Power. A pair of special need kittens show a daughter it's okay to be different. By Michelle Clock, Exeter, New Hampshire. Page 50, A Rocky Start. Making Over Their Lawn, Making Over Their Marriage. By Lynn Hartke, Chandler, Arizona. Page 55, A New Day. Mornings Didn't Feel Right Without Mom. By Lee Vidal, New Braunfels, Texas. Page 58, The Angel and the Fisherman, A Sailor's Mysterious Rescue by Stuart Renninger, West Mystic, Connecticut. 62, An Afternoon Well Spent. Caregiving Wasn't the Problem, She Was, by Stephanie Thompson, Edmond, Oklahoma. Page 66, The Secret of 60 Years, Time-Tested Tips for a Happy Marriage from a Beloved Guidepost Author by Elizabeth Tibb Sherrill, Contributing Editor. Along with your favorites, page 2, Editor's Note, page 6, The Upside, page 8, Spirit Lifting, page 10, Someone Cares, page 27, Mysterious Ways, page 49, A Preview from Where I Found God Today, page 70, What Prayer Can Do, page 71, Family Room, page 74, Continued. The Upside, quotes from today's positive thinkers. I am grateful and my gratitude makes me joyful. Henry Winkler, 79, actor. I'd rather be kind than right. Vince Gill, country musician, on how he makes his 25-year marriage to singer Amy Grant work. A friend of mine said one of the reasons God told Moses to take off his shoes in Exodus 3 was because God was about to tell Moses his story. And whenever someone reveals the story of their life, that ground on which they're standing is holy ground. That's the common ground. We're human, and we've got a story. Michael Curry, retired Episcopal bishop on Understanding Others. The good news is that joy, collected over time, fuels resilience, ensuring we'll have reservoirs of emotional strength when hard things do happen. Brené Brown, author. Unstoppable just means you have the courage to take one more step. Anthony Robles, NCAA champion wrestler, born without his right leg. A common misconception is that you need to feel good to get going. But often, it's the other way around. You need to get going to give yourself a chance at feeling good. This is why it's so important to just get started on the things that matter to you and give yourself a chance. Brad Stolberg, best-selling author. My dad always said to me, "I wish you enough." When I was young, I would say, "No, I don't want to have enough. I want more." Now I understand. It's learning to be content. Live with an open hand, not a tight fist. Michelle Yao, Oscar-winning actor. God is greater than any high or low, and he's there unconditionally. So I'm just leaning on him, not just in this season, but any season of life. Jalen Hurts, Philadelphia Eagles quarterback and Super Bowl MVP. The greatest gift you can possess is being who God has created you to be. Michael Todd, pastor and speaker. I make a point to appreciate all the little things in my life. I go out and smell the air after a good hard rain. I reread passages from my favorite books. I hold the little treasures that somebody special gave me. These small actions help remind me that there are so many great, glorious pieces of good in the world. Dolly Parton. You are not a drop in the entire ocean. You are the entire ocean inside a drop. Uniquely made. There's only one of you. Love yourself. Don't give up. Do your thing. Part of an announcement made by NYC subway conductor to train passengers. To begin simply refers to the first part, the first step, the first action, the first intention. Not the perfect one, not the right one, not the one someone else took, just the first. Lisa Kefauver, on processing grief and not needing to have it all figured out. Send an uplifting quote from a newsmaker or yourself to upside at guideposts.org. Spirit Lifting. The heavens are telling the glory of God. Psalm 19, verse 1, RSV. I pushed my mother's wheelchair to a sunny spot outside her care center, where we could sit and chat. She asked, "Am I ever going to go home again?" I didn't know how to answer. I'd wanted so much for her to spend her last days in her own home, but she was 89 and had suffered a paralyzing stroke. I could hardly bear to see her separated from her family, her backyard birds, and the hills on the horizon at her farm. I visited her often in the care center, but my visits fell far short of easing her sense of loss. "Did you see the moon last night?" she said. "I was thinking that if you saw the moon at the same time I did, it would be a way for us to communicate." At home that night, I searched for the moon in the star-studded sky. Even though distance separates us, my mother and I could still be together in spirit by remembering and focusing on those things we both love. Lord, please show me how to stay close in spirit to loved ones separated from me. Raylene Nickel. Gain strength and hope while caring for aging parents with comfort for caregivers, 100 devotions to lift your spirit. Order today at shopguideposts.org/DEVO. Someone cares, pass it on. Missing him, but not missing out. When my oldest son, Ben, went away to college, I really missed him. He attends Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia, some 400 miles from our home in Ohio. Ben is studying to be a worship pastor, and he often leads praise and worship in the campus chapel. I long to be there with him, listening to him sing and play his guitar. Knowing I was missing his performances made me miss him all the more. Then one day I got a text from a phone number I didn't recognize. It turned out to be from one of Ben's new friends at Liberty. He'd taken a cell phone video of Ben leading worship that morning and sent it to me. I told Ben's friend how much this video meant to me. Word got around, and now several of Ben's college friends record my son's performances for me. Those videos have been such a blessing to me that I've adopted the habit myself. If I'm at school or a church event and a parent I know can't make it, I snap some photographs of it or make a video of their child to send to them. None of us can be in two places at once, but with a little help from our friends and technology, we can feel more present in our kids' lives. Mandy Butler, Lewis Center, Ohio. Someone to sit with. Because of a rare neurological disorder, I use a walker to get around. It's hard for me to sit in a pew at church, so I always sit in one of the chairs at the very back of the sanctuary. Most of the time, I've been the only person sitting in that section, which would leave me feeling isolated from the rest of the congregation. A few months ago, a lady named Julie said hello and took the chair beside me. "I'm an usher this week," she whispered, "so I'll sit back here in my between duties." Even though Judy was up and down during the service, it was really nice to have some company. That afternoon, I texted Judy to thank her for her kindness. "It made me feel less alone," I told her. These days, Judy joins me in the back section of the church every Sunday morning. As soon as she sees me come in, she walks over to greet me with a big smile. I just love having someone to sit with. I feel so much more welcome and included in our church service now. Carolyn Bolts, Riverside, California. Time to celebrate. I set up a card table in our driveway, then decorated it with some streamers and a big sign that read, "Hello, Summer." I could hardly wait for the school bus to arrive. It was the last day of classes, and I wanted to mark the occasion with my sons and their neighborhood friends. I filled up paper cups with Kool-Aid or ice-cold milk. I set out plates with apple slices and freshly baked cookies. When the school bus pulled up at the stop and all the kids piled out, I called out, "Congratulations, it's summertime." The kids looked surprised but hurried over to enjoy the treats. Between bites, they told me about the interesting things they'd learned at school that year, and just as important, about all the fun times they were looking forward to having over the summer. They were excited about upcoming family vacations, trips to the community pool, and hours spent playing outside with their friends. That little end of the school year party was such a simple, tasty way to recognize that my sons and their friends had completed another year of learning, as well as to celebrate the fun, carefree summer they had ahead of them. Jeanette Martino Land, North Palm Beach, Florida. Have your own story of kindness and caring to tell? Email us at sc@guideposts.org. I'm Sandy Summers, and you're listening to Guideposts on Sun Sounds of Arizona, a 24-hour reading and information service for people who can't read print due to a disability. If you missed any part of this program, you can access it anytime on demand at www.sunsounds.org. In addition to the bi-monthly Guidepost magazine, each week we may be reading some of Guidepost's other daily devotions or inspiring stories from Guideposts online. Cover Story, A Better Man by Jermaine Wilson, Leavenworth, Kansas. He'd already served 4 years in juvenile corrections. Then at 20, he landed back behind bars, this time in state prison. Was there any hope for him? 23-1. That was the rule in the intake unit at El Dorado Correctional Facility, a state prison 170 miles away from Leavenworth, Kansas, the city where I grew up. You were locked down in your cell 24 hours a day, with 1 hour out for supervised recreation. While the staff did an assessment to determine what programs you were eligible for and where you would serve out your sentence, I landed in that intake unit in March 2008. I was addicted to ecstasy, and I was selling cocaine. I got caught with drugs in my car and was sentenced to 3 years for possession. Once I detoxed from the ecstasy, my mind cleared and the reality of my situation hit me. I'd already served 4 years in juvenile corrections. Here I was, 18 months later, back behind bars. Was this how I wanted to spend my life? Being on lockdown 23 hours a day gave me a lot of time to think. I paced my cell, sometimes talking out loud to myself, looking back at everything that had led me here. Maybe it was predictable that I ended up in prison. Where I grew up, resources were few. Violence, crime, and drug activity were common. My parents were poor. My mom had 4 kids. I was the baby by the time she was 21. My parents separated for a time. I thought it was because they fought and mom kicked dad out. I didn't know then that the fights were about his addiction and incarcerations. My mom and siblings shielded me. To me, my dad was a protector and provider, and I was hungry for his love and approval. But even when he was physically present, he wasn't there emotionally. I'd see other kids with their fathers playing ball, getting hugs, and I'd feel lonely because I didn't have that kind of dad. I felt lonely at school, too. We moved for various reasons, including an eviction. I'd have to start over at a new school and try to make friends. It didn't help that I was so short that everyone called me too short. I'm 5'2" as a grown man. I was picked last for every game, even Foursquare. When I discovered a way to get the acceptance and approval I craved, when I was 12, I broke into a house with my older brother. My brother grabbed the stereo. I went to the fridge and made myself a bologna sandwich. Someone called the cops and we got arrested. I was taken to the juvenile detention center. Because I was so young and it was my first offense, they let my mom take me home. She was hopping mad. "You're acting just like your dad," she said. I didn't understand what she meant until my older cousins told me. My dad was an addict who'd done time. It broke my heart to find out my hero was not so heroic, that my mom had been covering for him. At school, people heard about the break-in and my arrest. For the first time, they treated me with respect. I wanted more of it. Drug dealers became my role models. They had money, fancy cars, street cred. My mom started going to church. She convinced my dad to go too. He got clean and found steady work. They made us kids go to church with them. It was too late for me. Like my brother, I'd been seduced by the street life. At 15, I got busted for robbery and was sentenced to 2 years in juvenile corrections. I tried to escape and got another 2 years. I was sent to facilities in other parts of the state where I didn't know anyone. The other guys seemed a lot tougher than me. I can't be soft, I thought. I joined a gang and started fighting, dealing drugs to prove myself. "What are you doing?" my mom asked when she came to visit. "This isn't you." I broke down and cried. "Mom, it's hard in here. I just want to survive." I managed to earn my high school diploma and was told I'd be eligible for release 6 months early. 30 days before I was to go home, I found out my paperwork got messed up. "Leavenworth doesn't want you back," the correction staff said. "You have to complete your sentence." That really hardened my heart toward my hometown. When I got out, I'm going to become the biggest drug dealer in the city, I thought. I'm going to live it up and make up for this time that Leavenworth took away from me. Sure enough, upon release, I went back to my old neighborhood and my old ways. I got back together with Jessica, my girlfriend from before I went away, and we had a son. 8-month-old Jermaine Jr. haunted me as I paced between my bunk and the other end of my cell. The last time I'd seen him, he was fussing. He crawled across the floor toward me and raised his arms. "He wants you to pick him up," Jessica said. But I was high, and the sound of his crying annoyed me. "I've got stuff to do," I said. "I can hold him later." I walked out the door and took off in my car, not realizing the police were waiting. They pulled me over and found drugs in my car. "Now I'm 20 and locked up again," I muttered. Another statistic, a failure. I pictured little Jermaine Jr. looking to me, reaching out for me. "Is this the life I want for my son?" I asked. My question echoed off the brick walls. If something didn't change, my baby boy would end up like me, my brother, and my dad. I had to break the cycle. In El Dorado, I asked the correction staff if there was a program that could help me. "I want to be a better man," I said. They all recommended Prison Fellowship Academy, which teaches life skills from a biblical perspective. The aim was to replace criminal thinking and behaviors with new purpose and positive values. I wrote the director of the program and got accepted, and ended up in cell 507 in C2 cell house in Lansing Correctional Facility, right outside Leavenworth. I was wary of spiritual principles in the year-long program, but I knew I needed to learn how to think and act in a new way. The other men welcomed me warmly. "We're here to support you however you need," they said. I was used to reading people, but could sense no ulterior motive, not like on the streets, no judgment. I felt accepted right away. The program was intense. Weekly classes on life skills such as anger management, conflict resolution, accountability, goal setting, parenting, group meetings where we had to be honest with each other and ourselves, talks with coaches. It wasn't easy to unlearn my negative habits. The other men helped me stay accountable. Once in the program, I started getting visits from my family, including my parents, Jessica and Jermaine Jr. But after a few months, the visits from Jessica and Jermaine Jr. ceased. One day, 6 months in, I was in my cell missing Jessica and my son hard. My last few calls home had gone unanswered. I'd been writing letters to Jessica asking her about Jermaine Jr., but she hadn't written back. Had I lost everyone who mattered to me? I felt so alone. The next thing I knew, I was kneeling on the cold concrete floor. "I give up. I can't do this on my own," I said. "Please, God, come into my life and help me be a better man, a better dad." Something enveloped me there in the cell 507, a loving warmth that I knew had to come from the Lord, almost as if he was holding me. Not long after, a prison fellowship volunteer led us men outside for a special exercise. It was a revival weekend, and we got in a big circle around a metal barrel with a fire in it. The instructor handed out pieces of paper and said, "I want you to write down the names of everyone you've harmed. Then write down those who have harmed you." Everyone I'd harmed? The list was long. I wrote down the people I'd sold drugs to, stolen from, my parents, my girlfriend, most of all my son. Then I wrote down who hurt me: Dad, Mom, Jessica, the city of Leavenworth. By the time I finished, I was crying. I wasn't the only one. I asked God to let the people on the first list forgive me, and I asked him to help me forgive. "Lord, I need to let go of all this," I said. "I'm turning it over to you." Then I put my papers in the barrel and watched them burn to ash. My hurt and anger went with them, and at last I felt free. The next time my parents visited, I told them about the fire exercise and asked for their forgiveness. "Dad, I'm sorry about the mistakes I've made," I said. "I want to move on with my life and leave the past in the past." Dad looked at me in a new way, as if really seeing me. He explained what his upbringing was like, the struggles and challenges he'd faced. It was the first time I'd ever heard him talk about his past. Hearing the hurt he experienced helped me heal as a man. "We all have to take ownership of our actions," he said. "Keep God in your life and you will make it in life. I'm here for you every step of the way now." His words started to fill the hole my lonely childhood had left in my heart. I kept writing to Jessica, even though she never responded. At Christmas time, I was able to send a letter and a gift to Jermaine Jr. through the Prison Fellowship Angel Tree. One Sunday, I asked God if I should keep trying to get my family back together. "Show me if this relationship is meant to be," I prayed. Just then, I heard my name called over the intercom by an officer. "Wilson, 91082, you've got a visitor." My parents had come the day before, so I thought it must be a mistake. But when I got to the visitation room, there was Jessica with our son on her lap. "I got your letters about how you found Jesus," she said. "I felt so hopeless with you in there. I started going to church and I accepted Christ too. I want us to have a relationship with God at the center." I took her and Jermaine Jr. in my arms. "I'm so sorry for not being home with you," I said. "Things will be different when I get out." I promised Jessica I would use the remaining time on my sentence to become the man she and our son needed me to be. Jessica brought Jermaine Jr. to visit me often. I read to him, sang songs with him, and made sure to hug him, feeling grateful every time that my son was getting to know my love. I was released in December 2010 and moved in with Jessica. We found a church community, but I had trouble finding a job because of my record. I did whatever legitimate work I could do to support us. Laundry, housekeeping, lawn care. My pastor saw my work ethic and hired me as a janitor at the church. In 2011, he married Jessica and me. Eventually, I got a government job, but I couldn't move up with my felony record. I saved up money to hire a lawyer, and in 2015, had my record expunged. A fresh start. What's next? I asked God. I was volunteering as a youth teacher at a church and a mentor at the juvenile detention center. The kids were afraid of law enforcement, and the Lord urged me to do something to build trust. I organized Unity in the Community, an event with free food and a basketball game, the Teenagers versus the Police Department. By the end, the kids and the officers were high-fiving and taking selfies together. The energy was so positive. People encouraged me to get involved in local politics. In 2017, I ran for city commissioner. Other candidates went door-to-door. That just wasn't me. I set up my grill in the parking lot of the dollar store and offered barbecue chicken to people. While they ate, I told them my story. My name is Jermaine, and I want to change this community the way God changed me. I was elected to city commission. In Leavenworth, the commissioner who receives the most votes is given the title of mayor. That's how I became mayor of Leavenworth, Kansas in 2019. On my second day as mayor, I worked with the county prosecutor to waive fees for criminal record expungement so finances wouldn't be a barrier to other people getting their second chance. I served two terms as mayor and am still on the city commission. Now I work as a mission ambassador for Prison Fellowship. I go to events across the country to talk about ministry and encourage churches to partner with Prison Fellowship Angel Tree. I love my job. I love my family even more. Jessica and I have 5 kids. We're open with them about the past. Jermaine Jr. is 17, a high school graduate. I recently had the privilege of baptizing him. My parents are a big part of our lives. My dad is the best grandpa. He doesn't hold back on showing his feelings anymore. We hug every time we see each other. He calls me every single day, and if I can't pick up, he'll leave a voicemail. Hey, son, I know God is going to use you and do something important today, he'll say. I'm proud of you. There's so much love in my life now, and it all starts with God, who loved me even before I knew him and showed me how to be a better man, the man he created me to be. For more on this story, see Family Room. That's all the time we have today for Guideposts. Thank you for listening. My name is Sandy Summers. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.